Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
You know, I've been meaning to get around to this, and I finally did. See? I don't always put things off forever, but I have received audio quite a while back from Ingrid Dean. She wrote the Spirit of the Badge book, and this week I'm going to play some of that audio from her audio book. These are true stories, 60 true stories from patrol officers, mostly in Michigan, but all over the country, and some of it's inspirational, maybe some of it's just paranormal. But we'll play some of the audio on Out There this week.
This time, I was the victim. It was the beginning of the 2003 holiday season when my wife and I were invited to a holiday fundraiser at a posh restaurant in Detroit's Indian Village area. The purpose was to raise money for less fortunate inner-city kids so they could be supplied with shoes for the upcoming winter. I did my homework on the event. The mayor and some federal judges were also invited, so I trusted that their security details would have things well in hand. Thus, I did not fear for my wife's and my safety, or that of other guests, including a police lieutenant from my department and his wife. The entertainment, food, and drinks were fantastic. A very nice evening, even though the mayor never showed, nor did any of the federal judges or other celebrities as promised. Things were winding down for the evening. The valet girl found me and gave me the keys to my vehicle, saying she was going off duty and would no longer be responsible for my truck. Then, she ran out the door. I went to the door to look for my truck, saw it, and was returning to the restaurant when two gunmen broke in, rushed me with a gun pointed directly at my face, grabbed me by the necktie, and forced me into the dining room. One of them fired a shot next to my head and announced the holdup. I went to the ground, and a second shot was fired, fragmenting when it hit a $40,000 grand piano. A fragment of the slug struck a lady. I was not armed, as I believed the mayor's security detail would be present. It's a good thing I wasn't, because if my weapon were seen, I am positive I would become another Detroit homicide statistic. I believed I was going to be shot in the head as I lay face down on the floor. I threw my cash on the floor as the gunman demanded everybody's wallets. My wallet had a badge and police ID in it. If that were revealed, I most assuredly would have been shot. For some unknown reason, I envisioned a crime scene photo with me lying face down on the floor with my brain spilling out of my skull. I was not about to allow that to happen. My wife was only a few feet away, hiding underneath the table. She appeared to be okay. I began to pray, and I felt the presence of a guardian angel. The fear left me, and I was able to focus on the criminal's actions so that I might become the best witness and see them led off to prison in handcuffs. I threw my wallet under a table, and it landed face open with the badge in full sight. I flipped it closed. How they never saw this had to be the work of an angel. I was kicked in the groin as the number two gunman gathered up the cash and wallets. They went to a second dining room, and I heard screaming and another gunshot. Then, all was silent. I immediately called 911 to report the armed robbery with shots fired. I was still on the phone when the first patrol officer arrived, calming everyone and checking for injuries. Before I knew it, there were uniformed officers all over. Suspects were being picked up in the neighborhood and brought back to the scene, but I couldn't identify any of them. My wife and I were thankful to go home alive that night with only relatively minor injuries. About a week later, we were sitting in our kitchen having our Saturday morning coffee, watching the local Detroit news program, when I saw a story about a major arrest having been made by the Violent Crimes Task Force, a team comprised of FBI agents, Michigan State Police troopers, Detroit police officers, and some suburban Detroit officers. The number one gunman's mugshot was displayed, and I immediately recognized him as the one responsible for the armed robbery where we were victims. All weekend, I telephoned the investigator assigned to our case with no reply. Monday morning, I was able to contact a member of the task force and told him our story. The bad guy had been arrested with four others responsible for murder, armed robberies, and carjacking. A fifth suspect, a juvenile, had fled to Alabama, and the FBI were after him. Their specialty, was robbing patrons at fundraisers. Weeks later, I was able to pick him out in a lineup at the Wayne County Jail. Although I never saw the case go to trial, as the number one suspect had already been convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life without parole. I believe it was the intervention of an angel that saved my life that night, and also some divine intervention that led me to watch the local news channel and see the scumbag's mugshot.
Hi, this is Ingrid Dean, author of Spirit of the Badge, 60 True Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, and Intuition. Please go to my website at spiritofthebadge.com and check out my interviews with officers.
It's out there, out there, out there, out there.
Ghost alarm. Some police officers can never turn off their light switch, even while on vacation. They always notice peculiar things. In 1997, my wife and I rented an old one-bedroom cottage for a month on the island of Boca Grande, which lies on the Gulf Coast north of Fort Myers. My wife had written to the Chamber of Commerce on the island and learned about this cottage. The owner was contacted, and she explained that at one time it had been a fisherman's cottage and later the caretaker's cottage for a much larger home next door. The name of the cottage was Journey's End. When we arrived, the lessor greeted us and entertained us with some of the local lore. One story she told was of a murder that had occurred either in the cottage we rented or in the large house next door. I do not remember which, but it was rumored both of the houses were haunted. The cottage was old but clean, and the view of the Gulf was magnificent. We saw dolphins in the water in front of the cottage each morning. It was exactly the type of vacation we wanted. After we had been there about a week, my wife and I went to bed one evening about 11 o'clock, shortly after turning out the lights. The fire alarm above our bed rang very loudly. We nearly jumped out of our skins. It continued for a significant period of time, perhaps 30 seconds, then quit. I quickly turned on the lights and looked for smoke. There was none. My wife and I are non-smokers. I checked the house thoroughly for some sign of smoke or combustion, but there was none. I then decided to remove the battery so that the alarm would not sound again, as the noise was deafening. I got a chair and stood on it to reach the alarm. When I opened the cover, I discovered there was no battery in the alarm. My wife also confirmed the fact that the alarm had no battery. Did residual power cause the alarm to ring? We had been in the cottage for a week without the alarm sounding. Any residual current would have been dissipated. The alarm was connected to no other power source. There was no combustion or smoke present. It was the simple type of circular alarm with plastic housing that operated from a 9-volt battery. It never sounded again during our stay. How could this have happened?
Out there, out there, out there, out
there. Well, coming soon, we're going to have Frank Fascino, Jr. He's already confirmed. I think he might have a new book. I know he's doing a project right now, so within the next few weeks, couple of weeks, we'll have Frank on, and I'd really like to get him to tell you a story about something he did when he was young, a teenager and young adult. Something that's pretty interesting, I thought. And then also, I plan on having my good buddy David Twitchell back on the show. We haven't talked to him in a while. He's at the UFO conference in Laughlin, Nevada. And he'll be back from that soon, and we'll be able to talk about some of the things that happened there. Plus, I recently got an email from Jen, and she told me about... No, actually, it was from my most recent guest, Lisa. And she told me about a hypnotist and a feng shui expert, both of which I'd love to have on the show. And if you've had something unusual, feel free to contact me. You can just leave a message right in the shout box or send me an email. And you found the program at outthere.podbean.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Jill Cornwell, and I'm a telepathic animal communicator, and you're listening to Out There with TJ Ryan.
Free as a bird. My mother, whom I loved dearly, passed away at the age of 62. She was a lifelong smoker, which severely impaired her health during the last 10 years of her life. She suffered through several strokes, open-heart surgery, and other major health problems. Eventually, she was homebound, connected to a 30-foot airline and nasal cannula. My father had passed away, so Mom lived alone. Basically, all she could do for entertainment was read or watch television. To give her something to do, I bought a bird feeder and birdhouse and hung them in the tree that stood in front of her kitchen window. Her favorite pastime soon became sitting on a stool in the kitchen to watch the birds, some days for hours at a time. She enjoyed watching the many different birds that came to the feeder. Her favorite were the chickadees. They were always so busy and happy, and they traveled in groups. Whenever I came over for coffee, Mom would tell me how she loved the chickadees best. During one of our last conversations before her death, she told me that she wanted to be one of them. She was tired of being tied down and wanted to be as free as a bird. This was in early November. A few days before Thanksgiving, Mom became very ill. She did not want to go to the hospital because she felt she would not come home this time. I basically forced her to go to emergency, where she was admitted into the hospital. My nephew Jason had come down from Marquette to go deer hunting with me. Jason was only 15 and never had a father. He had a difficult life, so as his uncle, I acted as his father figure and had gotten him addicted to deer hunting. When Jason arrived, I told him that his grandmother was very ill and that we probably would not go hunting. Jason was disappointed, but said he understood. We went to the hospital and visited Mom. Before I went in the room, I spoke with a nurse who was also a personal friend. She told me that my mother was failing and that she would probably pass away in 3 to 7 days. Jason and I then visited with Mom separately for about an hour apiece. When I spoke with Mom, she said worriedly, "Ken, this time it's different. What is happening to me?" Although I tried to make her feel better, she told me she thought she was dying. She then asked if I was going to take Jason hunting that day. I told her no. It was windy, dark, and miserable outside. We would just stay in town and then come back later in the afternoon to visit her again. Mom insisted I take Jason hunting, stating it was her wish that I do so and that I was not going to disappoint him or her. She told me point blank to leave, go hunting, and that when we came back later, we had better have a deer hunting story for her. I hugged and kissed Mom goodbye and left, promising to do as she asked. I told Jason that we had been ordered by Grandma to go hunting. Jason was happy about this, even though I told him her situation was dire. Jason loved his grandmother, and he would be sad when she died, but her death had been expected several times during the past few years. We agreed to follow Mom's orders. When we reached the woods, I sent Jason down the trail by himself to a deer blind I had prepared for him earlier that fall. To make him feel better, I told Jason I was going to hunt, but that I wanted to stay near the car. After he was out of sight, I sat on the hood of the car thinking about Mom and our life together. I did not get my gun out, as hunting was the last thing on my mind. I had parked the car in the middle of a small field. After about an hour, the weather abruptly changed from dark and dismal to bright and sunny with a light breeze. I spotted a lone bird flying across the field toward my car. As it came closer, I was amazed. It was a chickadee, about the size of a robin, which is huge for this type of bird. The chickadee flew right to the car and landed next to me on the hood. It then flitted around the car, perching on the hood next to me several times. It would not leave. Eventually, I found myself talking to the bird. The situation was extremely odd. The size of the bird, the fact that it was alone, and that it was so friendly and unafraid. After a time, I heard a motor and saw a truck coming down the road. I recognized it as belonging to my best friend, Charlie Willauer. I instantly knew why Charlie was there. Mom must have died. As Charlie drove up, the chickadee flew in front of my face and then left. Charlie got out of his truck and gave me the news I expected to hear. Mom had died about 1 hour earlier. I knew my mother had visited me for the last time. She had come to say goodbye and to assure me that she was happy and at last as free as a bird. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that freedom for some does come in death.
You're listening to the audiobook version, just a couple of the stories from Ingrid Dean's book, which is Spirit of the Badge, 60 True Stories. Law enforcement, basically, stories from all over the country, most of which are centered in Michigan and a few in Upper Michigan, all true stories. At least they're apparently true. And I have no reason to doubt that they're not. So if you want to find out more about that, she has a website which is posted. And next week, we'll get back to more strangeness on Out There. Thanks for listening.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.